Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
All right, welcome in, everyone. It is another live Patriots Beat podcast here on the CLNS Media Network, presented by our friends over at Prize Picks. Go download the app today and use code CLNS for a first deposit match up to $100. I hope everyone had a fantastic weekend of sweating out Jack Golke 3-point entries over on Prize Picks this weekend. But it is Brian Hines. It is Alex Barth from 98.5, the Sports Hub, because basketball's over. We're having withdrawals of basketball today, but we got lots of Patriots news to talk about because Jerod Mayo spoke this morning at the annual meetings down in Orlando, Florida today, and he covered a lot of ground from their free agency approach to the draft. Obviously, the number three pick everyone's looking at, whether some of these quarterbacks he talked about, maybe trading down, and then talked about some of the players on the Patriots roster and some positions that they might be, you know, playing guys at. And so a lot to break down, a lot to cover. But I guess we could start with the free agency, because that was what is kind of over with the main wave of free agency. He kind of described it. He said, you know, be patient with them, right? Like, this is how they wanted to do it. They wanted to prioritize re-signing their own guys. They were picky. That was the word he also used with how they wanted to spend their money on the offensive talent in free agency. And he, I mean, that was, you know, they missed on Calvin Ridley, which he said was disappointing. But as he kind of said, there weren't a lot of other guys out there, especially at the wide receiver position, for them to just burn cash or throw a lot of money on. So this is, you know, they're going to draft, they're going to develop. And unfortunately, like, they had all this money, but there wasn't the talent to kind of match it in free agency this year.
Yeah, again, we just started the show. Sorry, long day, a lot of writing to do off of this, because Jerod Mayo said a lot. He said a lot and he said nothing at the same time. And this was kind of an example of that, in that, you know, he says, yeah, we'd be open to trading the pick. We'd be open to taking a quarterback. Yeah, you know, we wanted to spend, but we didn't want to spend it on any of the players that were there. Like, when he made the burn this cash comment, and again, he never should have made that. When he made that in the first place, I was like, dude, come on. And he's a first-year head coach. He's got to learn that, you know, he's not the linebacker's coach anymore. And yeah, if the linebacker's coach said that, it would have been notable, but it's very different when the head coach says it, right? So I think that there's a big-time learning experience going on
for him. Do you think Wolf should have said the weaponized part then after, too? Was that another, like, first time?
Neither one of those. That one's a little different because there's actually something tangible behind that, but it's like, that's, we've talked about this. Those to me are typical football bravado. Doesn't mean they're right to say, doesn't mean they're smart to say, but guys say things like that. The one that bothers me, I think I've brought it up on this show, I've brought it up on other shows, is the quote Wolf gave Patriots.com at the combine, where he talked about, you do yourself a disservice to skip out on free agency. You know, it's not every year we're going to make big free agency signings. We want to draft and develop. But when you have these resources and you have the, and I'm paraphrasing, when you have these resources and you have the roster you have, you know, it does make sense to spend a little bit. You know, we're going to burn cash is not a well thought out, nuanced football take. Not that I was necessarily expecting one from Jerod Mayo in that spot, but that's kind of the point. He's just been introduced as the head coach. He's going on the radio for the first time. He's feeling good about himself. He's got all these big ideas. And yeah, he said something a little cocky. Same for Elliott Wolf. He goes out there, he has these big ideas about how he's going to fix the team. And I'm sure he's heard the chatter about, no receivers and this and that. And he goes, yeah, we're going to weaponize it. It's just hog swinging, for lack of a better term. The actual detailed football answers that got ignored bother me a lot more. That being said, Mayo probably shouldn't have said that or should have phrased it differently. And he admitted that today, but this is kind of a pattern with him where he says things and then you kind of see him backtrack on it. And it's relatable. I think we've all been in situations where we have to feel it out. I know when I started doing this, there were instances where I would say something, I'd see the reaction and I'd kind of file it away as like, okay, lesson learned. And still happens from time to time. So it's not to fault him for that, but it is tough when he is the guy that's out there and the face or one of the faces of the franchise. If you want to put Wolf in there as well, I think that's totally fair. Who, is supposed to give the message, and we haven't gotten a clear message. And on free agency, it felt like a lot of backtracking. And you had multiple unprompted comments about ownership's willing to let us spend, but we just didn't feel like it was right to spend the money. It felt very much like and blocking out the noise is good. I know that was Bill Belichick's big thing, but I think for anybody doing anything, you don't want to hear, again, not to totally compare myself to an NFL head coach, but when I started doing this, at first, I was doing it and nobody was watching and nobody was reading and nobody was listening. And then more people were, and there were comments on YouTube and on social media. And I realized that when I let myself sink too much into the comments, I start reacting to them. I'm not saying Gerard Mayo's going through and, watching Patriots Beat and listening to all the podcasts and reading every call.
Come on. He's obviously listening.
He is. What's up, Gerard? I think, and to a larger extent, the organization, I think, is heard the reaction to free agency. And this felt like the rebuttal to what a lot of people were saying about how Patriots free agency has went. That doesn't, will that carry over to how they act in the draft, how they act in future free agencies? I don't know. Does that even necessarily mean it was the wrong thing to do? I don't know. I don't know. I didn't want them to go out there and totally blow up their whole offseason plan. That would have been terrible. It was just, that felt like, for everything that's, whether it was, and it may not have even been intentional. Maybe they felt this way. But maybe they kind of heard the noise and the messaging that was told to Mayo, hey, this is what we want our men. Because don't kid yourself. There's organizational, for lack of a better term, collaborative effort on this is what we want our message to be. It felt like a response to what a lot of the talk has been since the last time we heard Mayo and Wolf talk at the combine.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like it's growing pains, right? Like he said it, and maybe the plan is good that they didn't go spend a bunch of money and burn a bunch of cash on like these tier two, tier three free agents, kind of like they did in 21, right? But you're going to get this backlash. I think Andrew Callahan he tweeted it. It was kind of funny that, Mayo sits down and makes the joke about orange juice, and then halfway through the press conference, he spills the orange juice on himself. So it was kind of right, like summarizing everything and these growing pains that they're going through. But yeah, so that was a big thing. There was a lot of kind of comments about ownership there and how they're hands-off football. They're giving them the free will to spend the big money if they needed, but because they didn't get Calvin Ridley, that was kind of their big fish that they wanted to spend that money on. They kind of, focused on re-signing their players. You said like re-signing an offensive lineman. I get it. And Mike Onwenu isn't going to be a sexy pick, but he's a good football player. You want to bring those guys back. So that was kind of his message on that. And then, saying we're trying to build this thing the right way, which he said draft and develop probably multiple handfuls of times throughout the whole thing. We know how that's going to be their main approach. And he also hit on the wide receiver position as well. He said they're kind of in on the trade market, but then he kind of shifted it right to the draft. He said, this is a really good draft class. Right. I don't know. When you were hearing that, he said like, yeah, we're open on the trade market, but I thought he seemed much more centered on the draft for that wide receiver position.
I thought so too, but again, it was a lot of hedging. It was a lot of, we could do A, but we could also do B. And it's like, all right, well, those are your two options. And yes, we know you can do one or the other. It's funny. It almost feels like, and again, I don't know that he's doing this on purpose or not, I honestly don't think he entirely is. I think some of it is him just feeling out this whole NFL head coach media thing. Bill Belichick would say nothing. So we knew nothing. Bill Belichick would not indicate that the Patriots were going to do anything. And so we had a guess. Gerard Mayo says the Patriots could do everything.
Everything.
He puts everything on the table. And just so we've gone from the coach who says nothing is an option to the coach who gives us all the options. And we still end up on the same point. We don't know anything. Because if they're considering everything, we know just as much as if we don't know what they're considering at all. So it's funny in that regard. I thought this was an instance of that where they probably are exploring trades. They probably are looking at guys in the draft. He said one. He realized, well, I don't want to give away any information. So he says the other. And now we're right back to square one of could they trade for a guy? Could they draft a guy? That's where we've been. We've just heard him say that both are options, which we kind of knew. It's an interesting strategy. It's an interesting media strategy. It's an overload instead of a total blackout. And we'll see what happens with it. But yeah, I mean, with the free agents, with the pick, with everything, it's all on the table. All we know is that they're considering everything, which is good. They should be considering everything. And I think some things are better options than others. And he kind of talked about, and I know you want to talk about free agency. I'm sorry, I keep jumping ahead. When we talk about the third overall pick,
I was gonna go there.
Right. So he said, go to the pick. We'd consider trading it. You know, if we can get an absolute haul, we'd consider trading it. But we also there's options for guys we can take who will help us. And quarterback's important. And quarterback's a priority. Like these are all things we already knew. And I mean, I definitely have my preference. I think they should make the pick. We've talked about this. A lot of people think that. There's some people who think they'd be better off trading the pick. We knew those were options. Those are options they're considering. It's good they're considering everything. What we don't know is what those considerations are going to lead to. And that's kind of where we're left from today. It's like, all right, we thought everything might be on the table. We thought they might take a very thorough approach. They're taking a very thorough approach. The end game's still a mystery. And again, I'm not faulting him. If he went out there today and said, we're going to take Drake May, we think Drake May's the best quarterback in this draft. Drake May's the only quarterback we want. Well, now all you've done is given Washington all the reason in the world to start leaking they're going to take Drake May and force your hand to trade them the bag to go up and get him at two. So I don't, like, if this comes across as a criticism, it's just interesting how different it is from what we're used to with Belichick. I don't know whether it's better or worse. It's certainly different, but like with Belichick, you know, Belichick, if he was still the coach, would have gone out there today and he'd be like, ask him about the third overall pick. Yeah, you know, Matt's team's working on that. We'll have an answer. You'll know in a month. And, you know, you ask about spending in free agency. Yeah, the deals we wanted to make weren't there. We would have made the deals we wanted to make. And again, we would have known nothing. And here we are again, and we know nothing.
We just have to transcribe more.
Just a lot more transcribing, which is my least favorite thing to do. So in that sense, I don't love it, but it's also helps us hit the word count a little bit easier. So it's a give 100%. And a take.
Yeah. It is just an interesting, different approach. But again, like big picture, we still don't know what the plan is here. So he did talk a lot about that number three pick and kind of the two avenues they could take with a trade or taking one of those quarterbacks. He talked about some of the quarterbacks, but he was first asked about the trade, and he said, if someone offers a bag, as we would say, a lot of first round picks, we definitely have to talk about those things as we continue.
And he did qualify the bag. Sorry, just to cut in. I'm pretty sure he qualified the bag as a multiple first round picks, right?
Yeah, that was the exact quote. He said, if someone offers a bag, as we would say, a lot of first round picks.
A lot. So a lot to me means three plus. So correct. Good. Yes. We've been saying that since the Minnesota trade. That phone call starts. You're going to give me three first round picks and what? That is how that phone call should start. And it sounds like they feel the same way. So that's good. Like to hear that.
And the second part of that quote was, he said, the guaranteed way to win is to accumulate more picks. So if we don't feel convicted at number three, we are willing to do that as well. That was another big thing he was kind of talking about, which we've been saying a lot, is we have to be convicted that this guy we pick at number three is going to be a franchise guy, is what he said, which, you know, the worst thing you can do is force a pick at a quarterback. Just say, like, we don't really say it's Jaden Daniels. We don't really believe in Jaden Daniels like 100%, but we just need a quarterback. So we're going to pick him and hope that he works. That's how you end up the Jets. That's how you end up with Sam Darnold and then going to Zach Wilson. So it was good that I hear you wanted to be convicted, like 100% that this guy is the guy and they're going to pick him at three if he's there. But what do you think of him saying, you know, the guaranteed way to win is to accumulate more picks?
It sounds like somebody in a draft and develop program. The more shots you get at it, especially if you're confident in it, the more good players you have. That to me, and I think it makes it maybe seem a little more likely they're going to trade down. But the other thing I think about that is he doesn't say first round picks. He doesn't say, you know, I think the trade down from 34. And yes, I published a mock draft today, 98.5sportshub.com, in which I traded up from 34. Still ended up making 8 picks. I had already traded down another mock. I think that trade down from 34 or even maybe 68. Like, they're going to trade down at some point. So I asked this question on Twitter today, Brian. Patriots currently have 8 picks in the draft. I think it's, I got to go look up the number. I think it's four of the last five drafts. They ended up making more picks than they were originally scheduled to when the first round began. So over under 8.5 picks, how many do they end up making? Regardless of where, just like total picks. I think it's going to be over. I think that it's going to be, I think they're going to end up making 9 or 10 picks by the time the thing's said and done. And to add to that, they have 20 roster spots right now. And they'll probably sign a couple more guys, but 20 roster spots at this point is a good amount. So it doesn't mean they'll draft 20 players, but do they draft 10 and then sign 5, 6, 7 UDFAs? Like, that feels like it's on the table. So I don't know if you have like a number in mind, but I think 9 to 10 picks is definitely the way it's trending right now.
Yeah. Yeah. I would have said over 8 and then probably right in that 9 to 10 range, probably even because even if you don't trade back from 3, like, and even if you moved up at, like in our last mock draft and the one you posted, like we moved up from 34 up into the late 20s and then we moved back from 68, we moved down like 8 picks. So our mock draft, we traded up and then we traded down and we still had 8 picks. So you think there's some point along the lines that they can kind of move around and pick up a 9th, 10th pick. And then you get into UDFAs, you're probably looking at maybe a 13, 14, 15 member rookie class, depending on how many kind of veterans that they sign there. So
right.
Definitely going to be some action. You'd assume throughout the draft there. If it's number 3, we'll see with the bag. Probably depends how they feel about those quarterbacks again, if they're convicted or not. But we can talk about those quarterbacks. But before we do that, we'll take a very quick break and we'll hear from our friends over at Prize Picks.
Football season may be over, but the action on the floor is heating up. Whether it's a tournament season or the fight for a playoff home court, there's no shortage of high-stakes basketball moments this time of year. Get in on the excitement with Prize Picks, America's number one fantasy sports app, where you can turn your hoops knowledge into serious cash. Testing my skills on Prize Picks this season is the most exciting way to play daily fantasy sports. If you have the skills, you can turn $10 into $1,000 with just a few taps. Prize Picks is really simple to play, and I can make my picks and submit my entry in less than 60 seconds. Download the app today and use code CLNS for a first deposit match up to $100. Use the code CLNS for the first deposit match up to $100. Pick more, pick less. It's that easy.
All right, so if they don't trade down, you assume it's going to be one of these quarterbacks at 3. I thought it was, you know, kind of interesting.
You got to say that again. Your internet went bananas.
I cut out?
Yeah, kind of. You're a robot. You're good now, but you were a robot there for a second.
Okay, so if they don't move out of pick 3, if they stay at 3, it's going to be most likely whichever quarterback kind of falls to them. And I thought it was interesting, you know, Mayo was saying when he first sat down and started evaluating these guys, he thought it was a 3-man race. You assume it was Caleb Williams, Drake May, and Jaden Daniels. And now he's working through these pro days, these 30 visits, getting to, you know, meet these guys. And he said he believes there's 5 guys, honestly, that could come in and be solid quarterbacks in the future. So,
and then I think, didn't he say 5 or 6 later on?
And later he added like that 5 or 6. So you assume
he realized he missed one.
Yeah. So they were at the hand. I don't think he was at the Oregon Pro Day specifically, but they had a lot of people watching Bo Nix earlier this offseason. They had a good amount of people extensively meeting with JJ McCarthy in Michigan, who we can talk about in a bit. So you'd assume they're 4 and 5 in whatever order you want. And then maybe that 6th one slipped in there, which could be Penix, who all things have been quiet on the Penix front, but That's how he's viewing it. Five or six quarterbacks that could be solid in the NFL in the future in this rookie class.
Which, again, if he believes there's a starting quarterback, and I mean, I guess it's up to Wolf, but like if he's speaking on behalf of the team, then you take the guy. You don't leave a starting quarterback on the board when you don't have a starting quarterback. Which I said earlier, he said some things that made me think maybe they'll trade down from three. This was the one thing I look at and I say, no, they're staying at three and they're taking the quarterback. Now the question is, will they take the right quarterback?
Yeah. This made me laugh. He added five because he wanted some Joe Milton.
Joe Milton. Yeah, exactly. I said, will they take the right quarterback? Shout out Joe Milton.
Yeah. But the two you assume are going to be, you know, the discussion at number three is Jaden Daniels or Drake May. He talked a lot about one of them and not so much about the other. And the one was, you know, Drake May. He praised his, you know, competitiveness, his toughness, which is two big things we've heard a lot throughout this kind of cycle. Says he was a great interview at the combine. He, you know, his leadership kind of excelled. And he said he's got no ceiling as a player. He did mention the floor, right? You don't want too low of a floor with guys like that, right. But he really seemed to, you know, hype up Drake May. And then they asked him about Jaden Daniels. And he's like, oh, yeah, I was on a Zoom call with Jaden Daniels. We have a pro day this week. Drake May also has a pro day. But it was kind of a weird contrast between the two, I would say. I don't know if you would agree. It seemed like he was much higher on May than he was at Daniels kind of at this point.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we don't know because we don't know what he thought about Daniels. Again, was that he caught himself and realized he raved about a guy and didn't want to keep doing it? Is that actually how he feels? It's tough to say. Also, he got asked if, you know, he said they don't know what Washington's going to do with two. I wonder if it's something where the work they've done on May is a little more thorough just because they believe he's more likely to be on the board of three than Daniels is.
Yeah, that's also a good point. But yeah, he said the floor quote was just pulling up. I know a lot of people look at ceiling, but you also have to see how low the floor. He has a lot of room to grow. He's a young guy. That was, again, talking about Drake May. So that's what we've kind of said about May, right? He's 21. He's got all the tools. He's got all the upside. Right. But he can get a little funky on his lower body. He can get a little erratic. He can miss some throws. So that floor might be lower than some of those other guys like a Jaden Daniels maybe in that class. So are you like, how's your evaluation here? Are you just shooting for the upside? Does that floor come into play for you, especially at this quarter? Because I feel like the quarterback position is probably a little bit different here. So how worried are you like floor ceiling kind of with your prospects at that position?
I mean, I think you've got to trust your staff, and if they're open to sitting a guy, I don't think the floor matters as much if they're open to sitting a guy for a year. Now, to me, what it comes down to, if it does come down to Daniels and May, which it's based on new reporting today, it sounds like it could, like both those guys could be on the board. Do you want the more raw upside of a guy like Jaden Daniels, who I think has a higher ceiling outright, but you could have that, or you have the guy in Drake May, who I think is close, but is a better fit realistically for what Alex Van Pelt wants to do. And maybe it's just a smoother transition and that could close the gap where you're not going to have to adjust as much. He's not going to have to adjust as much. There's maybe a little bit less risk there inherently. And that's a real question. I personally, and I've said this, Jaden Daniels has been my QB2 since like January. Actually, I think going back further than that, I think since the end of the regular season. But I think he's close enough with May that I just saw them railroad a guy's development. I'm not going through that again. I think Drake May has the easiest developmental track in that they can more or less execute the plan they want with quarterback X, right? With generic quarterback, it's the easiest to plug Drake May into that. Whereas with Jaden Daniels, you're going to have to kind of, and not that they can't do it, and you might look at me and say quarterback's the most important position, change your plan. Go get the guy with the better upside. Go get the guy who has a chance to be better, to which I would say that's a perfectly fair take. It's a flavor thing. What do you want? What are you looking for? What specifically do you want to get out of this pick? We talked about this. I think if you're ranking it out of 100, if we're going to do the PFF grades, I would grade a pick of Jaden Daniels same as I would grade a pick of Drake May. But it would come down to what are the next steps? How do you want to approach developing the quarterback? Whatever you prioritize in that process, whatever you prioritize in a skill set, That's what's going to dictate it. For me, looking at who they have on the coaching staff, it's Alex Van Pelt. If they'd hired different coordinators, I might feel differently. Because again, I think in a bubble, if we're giving them Madden ratings, Jaden Daniels that much better of a quarterback, a little bit. But I think the scheme fit with Drake May closes the gap. But this is good. And this is part of the reason that the JJ McCarthy stuff annoyed me, is because this is the real conversation. This is the real fun conversation that we haven't gotten to have until right now. And I guess we're having in part thanks to JJ McCarthy, is if both guys are on the board of three, Jaden Daniels and Drake May, who do you take? This should be the big question of this draft season. And now, finally, it seems like here we are. We may actually get to discuss it.
And that's because we had, was it Tom Pelissero on NFL Network, I think, today? He was live, and he said, you know, talking to people, some of the owners, executives around the league, who's Washington leaning at number two? And the consensus answer was J.J. McCarthy, as he continues to kind of skyrocket up the board. Now, this is the same personnel group and Adam Peters from San Fran, who, you know, was hyping up. They had people thinking they were going to pick Mac Jones at number three, but he's also comes from a team that had Brock Purdy, who's kind of, you'd say, similar to JJ McCarthy a little bit. He's got a little Brock Purdy in him. So maybe Washington really does like JJ McCarthy, and that sets the table for the Patriots to have their choice here between Drake May and Jaden Daniels.
The names I've given as my floor and my ceiling for JJ McCarthy are Zach Wilson and Brock Purdy. Purdy obviously was drafted by the actual Niners, and Zach Wilson was drafted after the Jets Niner-fied their coaching staff with Sala and LaFleur. So it makes some sense that a 49ers executive would be in on this kind of player. I just, again, wonder, and I think that my perceived hatred of J.J. McCarthy, the train's gotten away from me a little bit. I just think, let me do this. Here's what I wrote back in January on my bottom line scouting report on J.J. McCarthy. And I still, for the record, feel this way. This is still how I feel. I know it's been twisted that I hate him and this and that. This is how I feel. If you feel strongly about McCarthy standing as a prospect, one way or the other, you're probably kidding yourself. There's just not close to enough high-impact reps on tape to fully evaluate where he's at as a player relative to most quarterback prospects. He certainly has upside, especially with his young age and athleticism, but he still needs time to develop. Whatever team drafts him will need to have a strong development plan in place and a willingness to be patient. A team that has a veteran, old, starter in place but will need a new quarterback in a year or two could be the best landing spot for him, setting up a Patrick Mahomes, Jordan Love-type development plan. That is still how I feel. J.J. McCarthy is a guy that's all about the situation. If you put him in a good situation, he's probably going to be okay. But that's why I can't understand him as a top pick, because if you're picking in the top 10, it's probably not a good situation for a quarterback. I would say Washington is better than some teams. They actually have some receivers, right? They have Terry McLaurin. But if they're going to draft him and sit him for a year, have at it. Fine. Because again, there are some tools there to work with. If you're drafting J.J. McCarthy to be a franchise guy, play him year one, week one. He's going to have nothing around him. You're counting on him to elevate everybody. I think that's Zach Wilson waiting to happen. So in terms of going second overall, I see where Washington is coming from. And it probably makes more sense for Washington than it does for the Patriots, or even I'd say for the Giants, who are another quarterback team who's their best weapon, Darren Waller, and he might retire. Like, he's considering retiring. Like, I look at, I don't think Washington's a great fit. Like, that's why the Minnesota trade up made so much sense to me, because they have Justin Jefferson, Jordan Addison, TJ Hawkinson, a good offensive line. You're just going to plug him in and let him go, and he's going to be serviceable. He's going to be net neutral, and that's all you need. I don't think you need to draft that guy in the first round, but you've built up enough of a roster that you can get a high level net neutral quarterback, which is a bit of an oxymoron, but whatever. So that's kind of where I'm at with it. That's where I'm at. Like, I don't think he sucks. I just think he's going to be a product of his environment. I don't think he's bad. I just don't think he's good. So if you have the environment and you look at where Adam Peters is coming from, he specializes in this kind of quarterback. he may say, I can get this roster to that place in a year. This is my chance to get the guy. I'm going to sit him and then boom, we're going to go. Yeah, it makes some sense. If you're going to put him in a bad situation, you shouldn't put any quarterback in a bad situation. But I don't think he has the tools some of these other guys do to at least handle it a little bit better. He's also, people point to him being a winner, 27-1 in college. Yes. What is that going to look like when he starts losing? Because he's not going to go 17-1 his first year as an NFL starter if he gets drafted by the Commanders or he gets drafted by the Patriots or probably anybody. Mac Jones was heralded as this like leader, had it between the ears kid. He'd never lost. And then he started losing. So that's just where I'm at. I think he's very situation specific. I understand why Washington may get giddy at the idea of that pick because they just made Brock Purdy work. And the idea is to replicate that. I still don't see it for the Patriots, and I still don't see it for most of the teams in the top 10. If Minnesota trades up again, that's another story.
Yeah. Well, he's QB1 on Harbaugh's board, so maybe that your Chargers dream scenario. Prove it.
Trade Justin Herbert to the Patriots or trade him to the Vikings and take J.J. McCarthy.
And
let's see it, Jim. Let's see it.
That would be so funny.
He's so freaking good. Again, I can't stress this enough. It's not that I hate J.J. McCarthy. I hate the undue hype he's gotten throughout this process. I hate the J.J. McCarthy hype machine. No problem with him. It's the people pumping him for reasons I still don't understand. Like, he's fine. There's nothing wrong with being fine. He's fine. I don't know why we have to make him more than he is. That's what annoys me.
Yeah. He's getting the quarterback bump, the classic quarterback bump. There's some enticing. There are some really enticing, right, you know, traits with him. He's a solid athlete. He's got a really good arm. But, you know, you look at some of the other guys at the top of the draft, these guys look like guys who can come in day one and start and, you know, down the line be the bus driver of your team. That's something we talked about right. A lot with Mac, someone who can drive the bus and lead you to wins. JJ, you know, I think you and I both think he has to start on the bench at least, you know, till Halloween.
Right. If he's in Minnesota, he could maybe. Yeah.
With that offense and those weapons, I could see him starting day one there. But like then he's with those offense in that offense and with those weapons, like he's not driving the bus there. He's just kind of along for the ride. And I think if you're drafting a quarterback second overall or in the Patriots case, third overall, I want the bus driver, right? I don't want someone who's just along for the ride like JJ, like we project JJ McCarthy would be.
And to the people who are saying, well, that's kind of how Drake May is described. We're like, he may need a sit. He might be a little bit raw. One, he's just athletically, physically more impressive. He's bigger. He's faster. He's stronger. Same physical sort of prototype if you want to go there, but there's more of it with Drake May. He's also just seen more football. He has more experience. Of the top six quarterbacks, J.J. McCarthy is the only one who didn't throw at least 350 passes in each of the last two seasons. For a reference point, Michael Penix threw over 500 passes in both. Drake May threw 517 passes 2 years ago and 425 last year. Like, I don't think there's a perfectly complete picture with Drake May. I don't think there's a perfectly complete picture with any prospect. But I've seen more of him where I know what he does well. I know what he doesn't do well. I kind of know what the moves are going to be need to be around him. You kind of get an idea of what the coaching points are going to be. To go back to the ice cream comparison, J.J. McCarthy's an empty bowl. Like, you don't even know. Like, Drake May, there's ice cream in the bowl. You're going to add toppings, whatever. But you have ice cream in there. You have a general idea. You haven't even gone to the store to buy the ice cream yet with J.J. McCarthy. And it's just that much longer of a process. And I don't know if the Patriots want to go through it at this point, can afford to go through that kind of process at this point. If it was 2018 and Brady was still here and you knew, all right, we're going to need a new quarterback in 1 or 2 years, J.J. McCarthy is the exact guy they should draft. The exact guy they should draft. Like, that's – and look, the guy didn't ultimately work out. 2019, I wanted them to take Drew Lock because I thought Drew Lock was that guy. I would not have taken Drew Lock with the top five pick. I would not have taken Drew Lock to start a rebuild, but I kind of like what he showed. And it was like, hey, get this guy in the building. Let's see. And you don't have to bank on him because the main guy's still here. Like, that's the guy to me, JJ McCarthy is. He's right for some programs, some situations. I just don't think he's right for the Patriots situation right now. I don't think he's right for Washington either, but I understand why they think that. And that may ultimately be the gift to the Patriots is JJ McCarthy goes second. And we've talked about how, yeah, you can like both Drake May and Jaden Daniels, but it sucks. You have to default on your guy. Well, now maybe you don't have to, or you have to default on your choice. It's made for you. Now, maybe you don't, which definitely changes things. Like the JJ McCarthy hype, which is very reminiscent to me of Will Levis last year. Just was Reddit. I don't love it. It may end up being an absolute godsend for the Patriots.
Yeah.
Or JJ McCarthy may end up going in the second round like Will Levis did.
That would just, besides JJ McCarthy going second and like that mess and that chaos that would ensue, like it would be just awesome to see the Patriots have their choice between Jaden Daniels and Drake May and just see who they pick, just to see how they go about this and how they evaluated everything like that. That would just be like the dream scenario to have both of those guys there and see who they pick.
That to me should be the conversation of this draft. That should have been the debate we've been having the last 2 months and for the next month. That should be the overarching discussion where we're having around this class, because it's the most interesting part of this class. The wide receiver class is fascinating, but it's up there. Drake May, Jaden Daniels, which way do you go? And to your point, I wish we were debating it more. I wish the draft experts were debating it more, and I wish the team had to debate it. We'd get to see that. That would be interesting, and maybe we will. You didn't answer, by the way.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
If JJ McCarthy goes second, who are you taking? Godfather offer.
I'm going Drake May.
Okay.
Drake May is my dream scenario at three. So that's who I'm hoping slides. But I'd love them to get the pick, because it's one thing if, you know, I want Drake May, but it's one thing if like Jaden Daniels, like Drake May goes two and then they kind of like, they just take Jaden Daniels, but if both of them on the board and then they take Jaden Daniels, you kind of feel more confident in that because, you know, like they said, they want to be convicted in the pick. So that would be really interesting to see. But again, we're talking JJ McCarthy going so high because NFL Network was saying that was kind of the scuttlebutt at the owner meetings that he might go to. Sports Illustrated too said McCarthy had lengthy meetings before his pro day last week with the Commanders and the Patriots, who were pretty well represented out there. So the JJ McCarthy hype kind of keeps rising here. And if he goes two, great. That's great news for the Patriots, but we'll kind of see where that resides. So last thing on the quarterbacks from Mayo this morning, I thought it was interesting because I hear a lot of the arguments. Is it worth picking a quarterback this high, right? Because the state of the team, there's so many other holes on the roster. He said it's 100% constructed to support a rookie quarterback from the personnel and the coaching staff. And someone also asked him what he kind of learned from the Mac Jones experiment. And he said, you know, he learned that you need to develop a quarterback. It's not only players you put around him, but the coaches you put around him as well, which we saw very well over the last 2 years with Mac Jones. So
that was one of the more definitive things Jerod Mayo said, and that should be viewed as a shot at Matt Patricia, 100%, and Joe Judge or whoever.
Yeah, that was one where, good for him. You know, he said a lot of things that could seem like a shot at Bill throughout his first 2.5 months, which most of it I think was just Jerod being Jerod. But that one, specifically saying, you know, the coaches you put around him as well, that one kind of seemed like the direct shot at Bill on how he handled Mac the last few years.
Oh yeah, I rightfully so, I would say.
Yep. But anything Anything that we missed from the quarterbacks there, or that number three pick? We can get into some of the other little details that Gerard hit on, but anything else? I mean, that was kind of the big stuff.
I think that's pretty much that. Yeah.
Yeah. So we learned a lot, but we learned nothing at all. They might trade it, or they might pick a quarterback. And again,
a lot was said, not much was learned.
Yep. And Jaden Daniels will throw at his pro day Wednesday at LSU, and Drake May is Thursday. Gerard, Elliott Wolf, TC, and AVP will all be in attendance. So a big week for the quarterbacks. But just we'll wrap it up with some of the, you know, a few other details that came up out of Gerard's press conference. I think one of the big ones was Christian Barmore. So, you know, speaking of drafting, developing, and extending, this is a guy they drafted, Christian Barmore. He's played very well. Gerard Mayo says they've started contract discussions with him. That's something we all obviously want to see done. So good sign that they are starting those, and we'll see where those lead.
Yeah. If this is what they're going to do, draft and develop, and you're going to, you know, pocket $60 million in cap space after free agency, you got to keep the guys on your team that can play. And we talked about Judon's situation. It's a unique one where he has 1 year left on his deal, no guaranteed money. I wouldn't commit to him super long term. I still think the idea of trading him is kind of interesting, especially after the comment today about adding draft picks. The Barmore essentially have to get done. You hit emphatically on that draft pick. I think he's probably their biggest draft hit since when. I'd say is he a bigger draft hit than Onwenu? I would kind of say so.
Probably. Unless you value like the sixth round find so much.
So that's the thing. It's like a different kind of hit, but you know, when's the last time they hit? I guess when's the last time they hit on a top 100 pick? Like they hit on Barmore. Would it be Joe Tooney? I guess.
I was going to say Tooney.
8 years ago now. So you can build defense around that guy. You keep that guy. I would love to see them pay Barmore. Obviously I'd like to see them pay Judon. I don't want to be like, I'm like, duh, trade Judon, but that one's a bit more interesting. It sounds like they want to keep him. My guess is it's like a 1 year bump. They pay him through 25 and then the two sides go their separate ways. That would be my guess. No inside information there. Just, I don't think they're, for a team that wants to draft and develop, it's going to be a little bit of a longer rebuild. Judon's an older guy. You want him in the locker room. He's a good presence, you know, veteran, all of that, but realistically he's not going to be this level of player when you truly are contending. So why commit big money to him down the road? I just think that's how they're going to view it. Cause at the end, Matthew Judon's great. He was a great signing. I know we all love Matthew Judon, but at the end of the day, it is business. And right now it's a bit of a numbers crunch when you talk about anything long-term with Judon.
Yeah. Yeah. Definitely one extra year added onto this. You could see that he did mention specifically, he said he was a great fit culture wise for them. So that could be something that, you know, he said those conversations have started. We know he's still a premier rusher in this league. As we continue to go forward, we want him to be a piece of it. So looks like they're planning on him being around, and, you know, get the Christian Barmore done too. You know, you have plenty of money to get that done. Just let's get that one done. So those were their defensive line kind of updates there. Offensive line, he confirmed the earlier reports that Mike Onwenu will start at right tackle. He didn't necessarily rule out that he might eventually bump back to guard. He said that's where he'll start at right tackle. But once again, Big Mike can play multiple positions. So we got to have those conversations going forward. But as we, you know, kind of talked about, he'll start at right tackle. And he was asked about left tackle. He kind of left that one more open. He said we still have room to add at the position, but he did specifically mention Chuck's Okorafor, who they signed, you know, right before free agency started, which we've talked a lot. That should kind of be their worst case scenario there with Okorafor, who hasn't played left tackle since college, which was 6-7 years ago. But that was the one name he did specifically mention in that left tackle conversation. But again, looks like we assume they're going to add a left tackle in the draft at that spot as well.
I touched on this in my mock draft today, again, 985thesportshub.com, that I wonder if they just look at it and he's the bridge guy and they're, you know, talking themselves into, or however you, it's probably a poor way to phrase it, but we got Chucks at left tackle. We can go receiver 34 after taking the quarterback, and then we'll develop a guy, you know, we'll take a developmental guy. Ideally, he's ready year one. If not, we attack the position next year. Like, I think Chucks Okorafor is that bridge left tackle. It's just maybe a little bit of a shorter bridge. Like, if you signed Jonah Williams, you're good this year. Like, you still should take a tackle, but you can go, you know, I think go fifth, sixth, seventh round with their only tackle and be okay. Because the idea is you get the quarterback, you get the receiver, you're going to attack tackle next year. Now it's just, all right, like, let's really try to, we acknowledge we're going project player at tackle. Let's try to get the highest end project player we can, but that does kind of buy you outside of the top 50. That does maybe allow you to slide to 68 and take, you know, the kid from Yale, whose name I'm still working on, or Javon Foster, or, you know, a player in that range. Maybe Patrick Paul's probably the highest end. He's like right on the line between project player and instant contributor. And maybe they, like, if he slides, just like, we know we'll need like a month to get this guy ready, and we just need Okorafor to get us through a month, like that kind of thing. But it does, I don't know. To me, it sounds like they're trying to set themselves up to go receiver with their second pick, whether that be 34 or wherever that is.
Yep. Agree with you there. The only other player he really was asked about was Marte Mapu, asked where he's going to play. He said he said he's very versatile, which we know. He said he's going to start at safety, though. Does that impact how you view that kind of free safety position more, that they're going to start Marte Mapu at safety this offseason?
I just hope it doesn't mean Kyle Duggar at free safety again. I mean, it might. I kind of figured that they were going to leave him at safety because, again, DeMarcus Covington said the defense wasn't going to change much, which he was safety last year. So I'd still like to see them come up with a full plan at free safety. Duggar wasn't it. Peppers can play it, but he's so much better in the box. I'd still like to see them try to add somebody, but it tells me that they're just going to try to run it back in that sense.
Yep. And then last thing from Mayo that I had, Troy Brown kind of got some clarifications onto his role today. He's going to be a skill development coach. They just said he'll work with skill players and also work on the offensive scheme. So it sounds like he's just going to kind of be one of these general assistants on the offense, bouncing around, doing a lot. I'm sure he'll still have a role with the returners. That seems like an area he's actually exceeded in the last few years. So that's kind of Troy Brown's role coming into focus there. I don't know anything. Oh yeah, go.
No, it's probably the best role for him. Just teach him how to have guys miss tackles. Like, that's, especially, we'll get to the new rules in a second, but yeah, I don't think he's necessarily a positional coach, but he'll just be around as a resource, which is not the worst idea.
Yeah, absolutely. So that was, I think, most of it or all of it from Gerard. Do you have anything, little notes that we missed there? Anything specific?
I think he said they're going to wear captain's patches this year. Oh, I mean, yep, I think that's the definition of a little note, right? If people made a big deal about that, I don't really know why. It's a little C on the jersey.
It's just the captain patch. It's not that big.
They're not the only team that didn't wear them. It's not like that was this solely unique Belichick thing. There's a handful of teams that don't wear them. More teams wear them than don't. But again, it's just one of those things where it seems like they're trying to be more like one of 32 rather than kind of being the outlier they were under Belichick. Sometimes for positive, sometimes for negative. I would say certainly more positive in the past, more in the negative in recent years. But it just seems like another move in that direction. I don't really know what to make of it. I don't think there's necessarily any deeper meaning behind it. I think it's just, you know, Mayo's, and he kind of talked about this. He's a former player. He knows what being a captain means. He wants guys to be able to get that recognition. Player's coach kind of thing.
Yep. That's what I kind of took from it. Hopefully they change the jerseys that those captain patches are on too.
Right. So, can we get somebody said we'll ask him about the silver pants then. But
yeah, that we'll do that next time. But
look, the NFL's starting to realize the bad jerseys are bad and turn them around quickly. The Cardinals those have been bad forever.
Is there a rule how long you have to wait?
It's five years. It's 5 years, but sometimes with like an alternate uniform, it can be
like
the Browns had those terrible jerseys, but then they basically just, so the rule is you have to wear your primary jersey 5 times a season. So that is your home outside of certain, like the Cowboys designate white as their primary jersey. But what the Browns did was they designated their road jersey as their home jersey. So they wore white at home, and then they made an alternate that was basically a better uniform, and they wore that. And there's ways around it, but the rule is 5 years. But I saw like, the Lions are getting new uniforms.
The Jets are getting new ones again. I feel like
They did. Those were terrible. I heard, I don't think it's this year, but the Titans might be getting new uniforms soon. Those are obviously some of the worst in the league. Those are new.
The Texans got leaked too.
Yeah, they didn't really change anything.
It was just they made like the number blue.
They made the number blue, and there's like a thing on the – they basically made the Seahawks jerseys, but red, white, and blue, which meh. But the Texans jerseys were always meh. I was never a big fan of the Texans jerseys. What they should have done, they had at one point in their history a white helmet that they used when they like introduced the franchise, but it was never worn. That should have been made when they went to the alternate helmets last year. The red helmet's cool. It should have been the white helmet. But the NFL, I think, is realizing that some of the jerseys suck. They're going back to minimalism, which is good. Really, I'd be fine if the Patriots keep... I'd be fine, like, tweak it a little bit, go back to the old... So here's what I would do for the Patriots jerseys, because, again, so relevant talking about a team that has a win total of 4.5, but this is what we do on the show. I'm okay with the blue jersey in theory. What I would do is change the number font back to the old block numbers, right? Like around the likes on the red jersey or like around the dynasty jerseys. Change the number black back to the old block numbers. I'd go to the silver pants and then basically even them out between red, white, and blue. So the blue jerseys aren't exactly a blue version of the red throwbacks because the font's different, right? Make the font the same, put silver pants with the home, and then evenly distribute red, white, and blue throughout the season. I think that's fine. I don't know that it's the best thing. I get why they don't want to wear red all the time. You can make the blue jerseys work. The blue jerseys don't have to be bad. I would try to fix the blue jerseys and then work the red. You can wear the alternate up to 3 times. You can wear each alternate up to 3 times. I think you can wear alternates total up to 5 times, I believe is the rule.
Yeah,
so I'd maximize.
The red's perfect, like 2 or 3 games a year.
I'd bump it up to a third. I'd maybe even make it do the third game as a road game thing. Take those babies on the road down to Miami, something like that. Actually, yeah, down to Miami because the blue is hotter. But I just get rid of the font. Bugs the crap out of me. I think that's like 90% of the problem. Well, the font's
blue
like
on blue. I just need the blue
on blue is though. Also up there. Fix the font and get rid of the blue on blue. And the shoulder stripes, fine. I get it. It's a knockoff of the Colts, whatever. The shoulder stripes, I have no problem with. Fix the font, go blue on silver, and then wear the red one more time. Fix the font on the road jerseys too, on the white jerseys. And then you're actually, I think you're in okay shape jersey-wise. Yeah. You're not going to be the best in the league. You're not going to be the Chargers. You're not going to be the Cowboys. You're not going to be the Niners. But you're doing fine.
Yep. So there's our jersey rant. I think this is their fifth year, right? Because it was after Brady.
Fourth.
Yeah, so this...
Fourth. 20, 21, 22, 23. Oh, no, you're right. Yeah.
So after this year, that they could theoretically change it if they wanted to. So we'll have to start getting in their ears about that right. One. I know Deuce is over there in Gillette, but... Yeah, so Captain Patches will be on him this year. But that is all from Gerard Mayo today. We do have a little bit of one more thing Patriots news related is they lost cornerback Miles Bryant. He reunites with Nick Caserio in Houston. He signed a contract. I don't think the terms of the deal were released yet, but Miles Bryant is gone. I know he gets a lot of hate around here for that one game against Isaiah McKenzie, and he did have kind of his flaws in man coverage. You know, he wasn't a burner. He wasn't a really fast guy, but he wore a lot of hats in that defense. He was really versatile. He was really tough, physical kind of player for them. And he played a lot of football. He played a lot of snaps. So they have a lot of snaps to replace. I think, you know, he might have played the most snaps among any of their corners last year. I know a lot of guys were hurt, but he was a good football player for them, and they're gonna have to find a way to replace him now.
Yeah, underrated player that I just think they never used properly, and that's why so many people hated him, because he was put in bad positions, and he was put in a lot of bad positions. But they've needed to move on at slot corner for some time though. Now you put Marcus Jones in a starting role. Maybe you kick Jonathan Jones to the inside if you get another boundary corner. How about like this is not that unrealistic that their cornerback group to open the year, CB1, Christian Gonzalez on one boundary, Stephon Gilmore on the other, Jonathan Jones in the slot with Marcus Jones backing him up, and then your third boundary corner is the winner of a competition between Isaiah Bolden, Alex Austin, Sean Wade, draft pick. That's a solid group. That's a very solid group. So I know I was higher on Miles Bryant than most people, sad to see him go, but this is a loss that they should 100% be able to move by. Marco Wilson would be in that group competing for the third cornerback spot, by the way. You'd probably keep two of those guys.
Yeah, you heard him talk. I think Wolf mentioned it, that they want to get faster on defense. So maybe you could see this, you know, you replace Marcus Jones in Miles Bryant's role. That's the way to get faster. Also, Sean Wade was really impressive in the slot in the summer last year, and then injuries kind of forced them back outside. Maybe they revisit that. But he was an underrated player for them. But this, it should be something you should be able to recover from pretty easily, especially with the depth they already have in that cornerback room in that secondary. So again, Miles Bryant off to the Houston Texans. But a little NFL league-wide news too. We got some new rules today. The hip drop tackle was back. It is officially banned. That tackle where you grab the guy and then kind of unload your lower body and kind of wrap him up down low. We saw Ramondre Stevenson get hurt against the Chargers on it last year. So that is banned. That is a 15-yard penalty. It's going to be chaos. It's going to be a mess to watch them try to officiate that.
Let's be clear. They banned tackling. That's what they did. They banned textbook, technique tackling. You can't go high. You can't hit the guy in the head. You can't go low. You can't get the guy around that. Well, you can go low on some players, not quarterbacks. You can't get the guy around the waist unless you spear him like a wrestling move. So it's either go for the knees or knock the guy the F out with a shoulder tackle. And part of me, 90% of me hates this, because just leave the freaking game alone. And the players all said they didn't have a problem with it. It's football. Guys get hurt. They understood that. If anything, change the turf to grass, which the owners will never do because it'll cost them a little bit of money. A small part of me loves this because I think in some ways it's actually going to bring back smash mouth football. Because if I'm an NFL team and I'm looking at this, I would not draft or sign any player that to carry the ball that weighs less than 200 pounds. And I wouldn't bring in a defender that weighs less than like 180 pounds. You have to be like big boy football is back. No more these 170 pound corners. Because what happens when you get him isolated on a screen or on a stretch or something like that? They can't tackle these guys. They're going to have no way to do that. And I kind of did as a joke today on Twitter. I did a hip drop is illegal mock draft for guys like Xavier Leggett, Malachi Corley, or these backs like Dylan Johnson or Audric Estime or Braylon Allen. These guys should be doing cartwheels today. Because again, if I'm building it now, especially right now, well, teams are essentially going to have to reteach every player to tackle in a league that does not allow you to practice tackling. And by the way, there are going to be a record number of injuries in training camp this year because every team is going to be doing live tackling drills way more than they've been doing in a long time. That's going to happen. Well, every team is learning how to re-tackle. I'm going out there and just getting a bunch of freaking tanks. And as a Landon Roberts would say, run the ball through an MF-er's face. That's got to be the move here. So I think it does impact your offseason approach a little bit. We talk about a guy like a Dylan Lauby or a Tyrone Tracy, these running backs we talk about in the draft, or even Roman Wilson or Xavier Worthy, these smaller, shiftier guys. I'm not saying they have no place. I'm not saying I wouldn't consider them. But I look at Xavier Worthy, who weighs 165 pounds, whose whole game is running by people. And I look at Xavier Leggett, who now I can isolate on 180-pound corners at 6'1", 221, and they can't use their own body weight to tackle him. You're telling me that doesn't look enticing? So I think this does definitely alter the way you look at it. It makes Derrick Henry the best signing of the offseason. Somebody in the chat, like a guy like Ramondre Stevenson, I think is going to benefit tremendously for this. He's a big, physical, powerful guy. Those are the kinds of ball carriers, whether it be a running back, receiver, tight end, that are going to massively take advantage of this, assuming it's actually called. Now, a couple years ago, they had that whole rule about the ball carrier lowering his head and everybody freaked out, and then they just never called it. So maybe this will be like that.
So that's what I was going to say, because did you see the quote from Rich McKay when he was talking, who's the head of the competition committee is what it's called. He said, this was the one thing that gave me hope that it might not be chaos. He said, this will be a hard one to call on the field. You have to see every element of it. We want to make it a rule so we can deal on the discipline during the week. So it might be something that they just don't call during the week, but now that it's a rule, they can just start fining guys for these hip drop tackles. But it's still,
well, you know what's going to happen. It's not going to get called in a game. It's not going to get called all year. And then the Chiefs are going to have a 3rd and 20 in the AFC Championship to win the game. And they're going to pick up 17 yards and it's going to get called. And they're going to get a first down. They're going to score a touchdown. They're going to want to win the Super Bowl. But right. Like that, again, that's assuming it all gets called. But if it does, and even if, you know, you don't know, I add a couple of these guys, add a couple of bruisers. Cause now again, the only way you're going to tackle is to shoulder tackle or like really spear tackle, wrap up a guy. That's really it. And do you want to put your shoulder right into Ramondre Stevenson's gut when he's going full speed? Like, that's going to hurt. That's going to hurt a lot. And if you're a smaller linebacker, a corner, a smaller safety, you can't do that for 60 minutes, 17 times a year. You can't. Like, you just physically are not going to be able to do it. So as they go on, I kind of talk myself into this because it's like, hey, Smash Mouth football might be back. Running the damn ball might be back. Because if you can't, think about it, if you can't tackle him anyway, why am I going to risk throwing the ball 35 yards down the field where the corner can make a play on it when I can just hand the ball off and you can't tackle him? And I'm sure there'll be some offset rule in a couple of years, but in the meantime, you take advantage. So I'm with you. Like, I don't necessarily think they're going to call this, but if they do, big boy football, baby, strap on that helmet.
Music to Alex Van Pelt's ears. And oh, you're talking like running backs a lot. I see I'm with like these big tight ends. Like, you get some of these tight ends in the draft who are like big boys and have good athletic profiles. Like, you know, we took Tip Ryman in our last mock draft, like Theo Johnson, Benson.
I had Theo Johnson and Jatavion Sanders in my hip drop as a legal mock.
You just get those guys in the flat and you're going to have like a nickel Miles Bryant trying to tackle those guys. Like, those guys are going to feast in just those little dump off passes in the flat.
What would you say? What percentage of the times Rob Gronkowski got tackled were hip drop? It's got to be over 80%. Like, he would have been unfair. He would have been, he would have scored 30 touchdowns. He would have scored 30 touchdowns. You wouldn't have been able to tackle him.
Yeah, that would have been, that would have been a nightmare.
It'll be interesting. It'll be interesting to see.
Yep. But there was one other rule that got passed. I think it was teams have a third challenge now if their first one is successful. So,
I always thought that was a thing.
I know. I don't know why. I'd have to read more into the reading. There must be some like little specific detail about that.
Yeah. But was it that? Because you know what it was? Because in the past was if you got your first two right, you got a third. Now I think it's you only have to get one of your first two right to get. Oh, great! More challenges. Awesome. Sick.
I've seen enough stoppage of plays watching college basketball all weekend. We don't need more challenges. But the one rule I think we're all kind of waiting on, which sounds like they didn't vote on it here for some reason. Sounds like they're going to wait for the next meeting, which I think is in May, is the new kickoff rule, trying to bring kickoffs back into the game. They're kind of copying that XFL style where the kicker is back by himself and then the return team and the kick coverage team is lined up 5-10 yards away from each other, and you're trying to land it in between the kicker's trying to land it in between the 20 and the end zone, and depending, you know, if you just kick it out of the end zone, it's a touchback to like the 35 yard line, so the touchback is worse. They're trying to bring returns back. I think it's a great way to just make that play relevant again, and hopefully that does pass whenever they decide to vote on it here. I don't know what the holdup is, but it does sound, when they do vote on it, it sounds like it has support with the owners that it is going to pass. So
I think they said they have a couple teams on the fence, and that's kind of what they're trying to get, those last couple of teams, and the sweetener might be they're just going to pass it for the preseason with an option to pick it up for the regular season. I love it. If you haven't, go watch the XFL kickoffs. It's a fun play. It's a real football play. Like, it's a real actual, you can scheme it up. You can design things. You can create misdirection. You can create conflict. It's not just blunt force, 11 guys running into 11 guys. I'd love to see it. It's definitely a much better alternative than losing the kickoff altogether. I don't mind getting rid of the surprise onside kick. Like, yeah, those are fun plays. But for how often you see them, making kickoffs fun and exciting again is totally worth the trade-off. I hope this passes. I really do.
Yeah. I think someone tallied the numbers. It was like less than 5 surprise onside kicks last year. It may have been like 3 or less. So I know it sounds bad losing that surprise onside kick, but that never happens in the league today. And if you want an onside kick, I think you have to be trailing in the fourth quarter and you have to declare it. And then it's just like normal as it is now, onside kick rule. So I hope that does pass, because I mean, the kickoff was just a pointless play last year, unless you were Nelson or Jalen Reagor and Buffalo, but they need to try to bring that back. And that seems like the best way to make the play prominent again and make it safe at the same time. So hopefully that does pass whenever, again, they do decide to vote on it.
Yeah. And it sounds, I think it's going to happen. It may take a little bit longer, but I think it's going to happen.
It does sound that way. But I believe that is all the news from Gerard Mayo, the Patriots news, the news from the NFL annual meetings. Anything that we missed or any other takes you want to get off your chest before we log this off?
I think that's pretty much it.
All right. So we will be back Thursday, mock draft again.
Yes. That'll probably be earlier in the day. We'll figure it out. It might be a little earlier again.
Okay. But yeah. So make sure you subscribe to the channel, turn on your notifications so you do know exactly when we go live on Thursday. Mock draft 3.0 coming up. In the meantime, you can go read Alex's current mock draft on 985thesportshub.com and follow him on Twitter at RealAlexBarth. You can also follow me on Twitter at IamBrianHines and go read all our Patriots and Gerard Mayo coverage from today over at PatsPulpit.com. Thank you all, as always, for tuning in today, and we will see you guys later this week.